Please call the case.
Case number SCAP 11-536, Amit Sang v. Clark, arguing for the appellant, Thomas Otake, arguing for the appellee, Jonathan Ortiz. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, counsel. Pardon me, good afternoon. This is a rare afternoon argument for us. Are you both ready to proceed today? You are? Okay. And then, Mr. Otake, you asked to be notified or reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. So with 5 minutes to go in your argument, a yellow light will come on just to let you know that you're cutting into that time. And Mr. Ortiz will have a warning light for you with 5 minutes to go in your argument as well. So please proceed. Thank you.
Thank you. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I'd like to first begin today by acknowledging the presence of Jason and Tracy Mukhsang, the appellants in this case, the parents of Makamai Mukhsang. As the court is aware, this case stems from the untimely death of 15-year-old Makamai Mukhsang. To put it in its simplest terms possible, the issue before this court today can be summarized as follows. Does the common law and statutory limitations on social host liability preclude any and all causes of actions against an adult non-occupier who invites 15-year-old onto the property, provides her with lethal amounts of alcohol, and then does not assist her in any way when it is clear that she needs help? Or was there a duty in this case, separate and apart from the duties discussed in the line of cases relied upon by the appellees, a duty based on the relationship so long as she was on his property, and a duty based on the fact that arguably he's the one that put her in harm's way? And we would submit that, yes, there was. What I would like to do today, because at least to me it makes sense, is that I'd like to talk about this duty owed, why it's different from the cases, and why those cases are inapplicable, and then discuss the statute at issue and why that's also inapplicable. But before I do that, just to quickly summarize, as the court is aware, the facts that in this case the court must assume to be true must be in the light most favorable to the plaintiff appellants, and the facts from which this court must draw any favorable inferences towards the appellants are in summary as follows. 25-year-old Michael Clark had a party at his house.
Did you argue, Ono versus Applegate, violation of liquor control law is evidence of negligence, is properly submitted as evidence of negligence. Did you argue that at all to the trial court?
Well, Ono v. Applegate obviously created a dram shop liability dealing with a commercial liquor distributor.
But also it's pretty well established under the laws, case law of this jurisdiction, that violation of an administrative rule or law or a penal law can be evidence of negligence. And
yes,
in this case, it's very clear, 281.10.101.5, any adult who provides liquor for consumption to a minor, that's a violation of the liquor law. And also 712.1250.5, a person, and you say that the provider here did plead to this offense. It's a crime to provide liquor to a minor.
Yes.
So on that basis alone, isn't this case distinguishable?
I would agree. And I believe we did argue that.
Did argue that?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, in addition to that, the other reason this is clearly distinguishable, and I want to make clear from the start, we're not saying that any of these cases, Ono v. Applegate, Bertelman, Winters, we're not saying any of that needs to be overturned. We're saying this is separate and apart. The analysis is different because there's separate duties. And as in addition to what we just talked about, there's a duty when, as a land occupier, you reasonably anticipate someone to be on your property. There's a duty owed to them while they're on your property, and that duty is to provide reasonable care for their safety and well-being. And that comes from cases like Diebel versus Honolulu and others. Secondly, when you look at the restatement of law torts, and it mentions situations in which somebody puts another in a position of harm or causes harm, then there's also a duty to try and assist.
Mr. Otake, explain to us why 66341C does not apply to this situation.
Absolutely. And to do that, I'm going to do that by first also talking about some of the cases. KFC versus Johnson said there was no social host liability in a situation in which somebody consumes alcohol from a social host, leaves the property, is away from the property, and injures a third person, an innocent third party, away from the property. KFC versus Johnson, in other cases, said there's no duty owed from the social host to the innocent third party. What that statute you brought up did is really create an exception to that concept in Johnson and other cases, in which if the innocent third party is injured by a minor that was provided alcohol by the social host could be liable. It's called right of action, and it's talking about, the purpose of it was to carve out an exception and give a right of action to a third party injured. And so clearly, when you look at that, one of the arguments we put forth in our brief, and I would submit today, one of our strongest arguments is we need no exception to cases like KFC versus Johnson. We need no exception to cases like that. That's not the type, we're not relying on that dram shop liability type of argument for our cause of action. And because we're not precluded by cases like KFC versus Johnson, because there's other duties that I discussed earlier, because we're not precluded by Johnson, we don't need the statute to allow us to bring suit. So the statute is inapplicable in that sense. Now, further, when you look at the statute, I mentioned, even if someone were to think it was applicable, the subsection that is relied upon by the appellees when it talks about whether or not someone under 21 causes injury can then recover under this part, and it says that they cannot. Again, first of all, you're talking about a situation when somebody, I would argue, left the property, but more importantly, for the purposes of why we're here today, viewing what's alleged in our complaint in the light most favorable to us, there's an argument that, and assuming and making reasonable inferences in our favor, did Makamaya Mutsang, when she was 15 years old, cause the injury to herself? Was this injury caused by 25-year-old Michael Clark, who invited her onto her property, encouraged her to consume lethal amounts of alcohol, and did nothing to help her? So there's this causation problem that, number one, in terms of getting by the Rule 12b6 motion, viewing the evidence or what's alleged in the light most favorable to us, this, you would get by the statute anyway, even if you felt it applied. But again, we don't even need an exception to Johnson through this statute. And it says someone under 21 is not able to recover under this part. We're not relying on this part because we don't even need the exception under this part.
What would your answer be to the suggestion that this, you know, the legislature, by addressing this issue and legislating on this subject, intended to preempt us from further development of the common law?
What I would suggest to that question, or what I would submit, I should say, is when you look at that language, whether or not someone under 21 causes injury, I would argue it's at the very least, I would argue it, what they're talking about is if it's injury caused to a third person off site, because that's what this statute is about. But secondly, at the very least, it's ambiguous, which leads us to the legislative history. And as I pointed out in our brief, when you look at what the legislature was trying to do here, and you look at the legislative history, it talks about this measure would impose civil third-party liability on adults who provide alcoholic beverages to a person under 21 years of age who subsequently injures or kills another. The committee finds it essential to deter complacency on the part of any adult who condones or tolerates the acquisition or use of alcohol by children on premises under the adult's control. That was the spirit of this law.
But the subsection carves out an exception.
It carves out an exception to KFC versus Johnson, saying it's creating an action for third party injured off-site, but it's not necessarily creating an exception to an injured minor off-site, you know, under the dram shop type of situation.
But I guess that's the question is, you know, was it, again, I come back to, was the legislature sort of preempting the field by saying in this, we are going to allow this one limited cause of action in this area. And by the way, we are specifically precluding a minor from being able to recover.
And it goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that the statute and what we're talking about are two very different things. You're talking about someone leaving the site, so then you're not in that special relationship situation between land occupier and someone reasonably expected to be on their property. So that's a very different situation, because with the statute, and when you read the legislative history, I would submit that if you take what they're arguing, the way the statute should be applied to its logical conclusion in terms of what they're arguing, if you take it to its logical conclusion, you get to an illogical result. In other words, they're saying that this statute, the purpose of it, was to make it so no land occupier, while there's a minor on their property who's serving them alcohol, and as young as 8 years old or younger, could ever recover for any type of action. I mean, that's the logical conclusion that they would reach.
Isn't the legislative history cited by the defendant? Doesn't it make it pretty clear that the statute was intended to allow for social host liability when a minor injures another person, and that's what this is intended to apply to?
Absolutely.
And doesn't the statute itself say an intoxicated person under the age of 21 years who causes an injury or damage shall have no right of action? And it doesn't say it's when that minor causes the damage, not when the damage is caused to the minor by the adult who provided the alcohol.
And that's exactly our position in our brief, is that the statute doesn't apply, but even if you believe it did, that there's that language about causes, and for the purpose of the 12b6 motion, I would argue that you must view the facts in the light most favorable to us, in which case it was Michael Clark who caused the injury to the minor. It was not the minor who caused the injury to herself.
What about an incident in which a minor leaves the premises and is involved in a one-car accident and suffers injuries? Would that minor be precluded by C or not?
If the minor left the property and was injured off-site, the argument would be stronger that the statute would preclude such a claim in a situation like that. However, it would depend on what the minor's age was, because when you look at the Winters case, and Levinson, in his concurring opinion, and I believe the Delos Reyes or Reyes case, talks about that. And Winters, I would argue to this court, stands for the premises that there's really two classes of minors. And that when you have the liquor laws that they're talking about in Winters, these liquor laws used to be 18 and over. You could sell alcohol to or could 18 or over could possess it. And then it switched to 21 and over. And the plaintiff in Winters was trying to say, well, now his client, who was 18, almost 19 at the time, should be now included in this protected class. I would argue that what that case stands for is that 18 and under has always been part of a protected class under the liquor laws. Simply though, when the legislature raised the age to 18 to 20 to 21, what the history showed is that was done more so, or primarily so, to maintain federal funding for highways, and not because of a concern by the legislature to add the 18 to 20 year olds into this class when they're treated as adults in all their ways. But clearly you have a situation where someone 15 is part of this protected class. And clearly, I would say to the court, to answer its question, it would depend on the person's age. If the person was under 18, I would argue it wouldn't be precluded.
Mr. Otake, isn't Winters about personal responsibility? Because the Supreme Court said that drunken persons who harm themselves are solely responsible for voluntary intoxication. What comes from that? Does a 15-year-old not have any responsibility for that?
What happened is Bertelman first set that concept out. And then, but it specifically applied to adults, and it reserved a ruling on minors. And then in Winters, as you know, the district court of the U.S. District Court certified a question down to the Supreme Court about if you know, on this issue. And the question back by the Supreme Court was, well, what do you define as minor, as a minor? And they said 21 and under. And that's why the Winters court, I would say, quite clearly indicated there's two sets of or categories of minors. 18 to 20, when you can vote, buy cigarettes, join the army, treat as an adult in all other ways, that's one thing. When you're talking about someone under 18, 15, or even younger, and I cite two cases from Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey, which basically stand for the premise that someone at that age is not capable necessarily of understanding the dangers or the immense dangers of not only alcohol consumption, but excessive alcohol consumption, and the fact that someone at that age is more susceptible, that each sip they take, they become less and less able to understand it, that they should be treated differently, and that the statutes did create a protective class for that group of 18 and under.
So it's pure age. If the child here was 18, you wouldn't be here.
Well, on a case-by-case basis, the Blair case says duty should be decided on a case-by-case basis. It would depend on the circumstances. But when you're talking about someone 15, I would say under the duties that we're saying should apply, that age matters tremendously.
Can you address the criteria set forth in the Blair case?
When you look at the criteria in the Blair case, and this is one of the things I talk about, is why when you're talking about a situation where somebody leaves your premises, and the other important factor that there's an intervening accident that leads to the injury, and the injury is not the alcohol consumption itself and alcohol poisoning itself. When you apply the factors in Blair to that, for example, the foreseeability of the harm, when somebody's lying on your floor, visibly ill from the effects of alcohol and unconscious, the foreseeability of harm is obviously a lot greater than when they were to leave the property and an accident happened off-site. The causal relation of and the proximity of that, when you're 25 and you're giving a 15-year-old lethal amounts or excessive amounts of alcohol, and that's what she dies of, is alcohol poisoning. You know, when you look at Blair, those things are there. Blair talks about public policy as well. Blair talks about public policy as well. And I would submit that, obviously, that factor would be in our favor as well. And it talks about, you know, the effect it would have on insurance and things like that. And like I said in my brief, you know, people have the ability to not serve alcohol to minors at their home. And so if there's consequences for that, whether in insurance or otherwise, that would be fair and just. Now, it ties into the statute, too, when you talk about our age. That last part where it says someone under 21 who causes injury. The fact that she's 15, and part of this protected class, I would argue, under Winters, that Winters points out, is based on the statute. It applies to the statute as well, because you have a situation when you're talking about who really causes injury. Perhaps, you know, when someone's older as an adult, that's arguable. But when someone's 15, our position would be that it's the 25-year-old continuing to encourage and provide alcohol that caused that injury. It takes it out of that part. Now,
I just want to come back just again, you know, because we have to look at where the cases are going to lead or where the law is going to lead if we rule in your client's favor in this case. Again, your position would be someone under say a 15-year-old who's given alcohol and then gets in a car and drives off the premises and then gets in a one-car accident. Would the statute preclude that person or not? What's your analysis of that?
That's a tougher call. I'll submit that's a tougher call, but again, it goes to the causation factor. It's a tougher call because it is removed in the sense that it's off-site, it's not as foreseeable, but it goes back to who caused the injury. And if it was a situation where someone 15 was encouraged and just forced, or depending on the facts, consume so much alcohol and the 25-year-old knew it and then say, hey, go out there and drive. Here's my keys, drive down the car. I think that'd be a fact issue for the finder of fact as to who caused it. So it's a tougher call, but it depends on the facts because there is that issue in subsection C as to who caused it. And so what I want to really make clear is what I'm saying today can coexist with the current case law and can coexist with the statute.
What do you see subsection C is trying to accomplish, and why wouldn't it apply in this case?
Subsection C is carving out, the purpose of it was to create a right of action for a third party injured off-site. That's the purpose of what it was trying to accomplish.
The statute, 663, 41.
Yes, it was trying to accomplish that It was trying to carve out an exception to the KFC versus Johnson and related cases that preclude liability or that say there's no duty between a social host and a innocent third party injured off-site. It's called a right of action is what the statute is entitled. And so that's what this statute was dealing with. And so as part of that, it said, you know, in a situation like that, it wasn't trying to say in a situation like that, if a minor is injured offsite or if the minor did cause injuries offsite, then the minor could bring a cause of action. It wasn't dealing with that. It was dealing with the injured third parties, and it didn't go into that. But it surely wasn't saying anytime a minor sips alcohol on someone's property, there can never be any cause of action brought when that cause of action is based on other types of duties.
Also, is one aspect would be whether there's another duty involved or another source of a duty besides the statute.
Right, because and that goes to that language at the end that talks about based on this part, right? I mean, it talks about someone 21 and under who causes injury cannot bring a cause of action under this part. In other words, they cannot use this exception to the case law like Johnson. But when Johnson doesn't preclude these other types of situations and there's these separate and independent duties that are there, the statute is clearly not saying that negates everything. It doesn't say that. And again, that would be the absurd result of saying you could give a minor as young as 8 lethal amounts of alcohol and watch them, die on your floor and, well, there's a statute, or I'm a social host, so therefore, that's different. There's different duties that are not precluded by the statute and are not ruled out by the cases. It's a different analysis. It's a different arena, I would say.
Mr. Otake, if we apply the criteria set forth in Blair v. Ng to your case, that's all we would have to do. We wouldn't have to address what would happen if it was off-site, if it was an 18-year-old. We would need to only address the exception or the applicability of your case to a 15-year-old who consumed alcohol on site.
Yes, and that's my point. Is I'm not asking to overturn any cases. I'm not asking to create, open the floodgates or anything. I'm saying when you look at this case by case and you consider Blair and those factors, surely there should be a duty. And when you look at the cases like Giebel, and you look at the restatement of torts, surely there should be a duty in a situation like this. And surely that the legislature didn't intend to reach this result with this statute. And surely this court didn't intend in cases like KFC versus Johnson to suggest that in no situation should a minor served alcohol while they're still on the property be able to bring a lawsuit. I mean, and with all due respect, that the appellee's argument it's taking this case law that precludes a certain cause of action under certain duty under certain circumstances and trying to enlarge it and trying to take the statute that was meant for this one thing and the statute, the spirit of it was to deter serving alcohol to minors. It wasn't to try and create a shield for people that did.
It seems like the legislature was concerned about minors who injure other people and whether they should be allowed to recover or not. Is that a distinction in this case because she didn't injure anyone else other than herself? Or is that a distinction that matters or not in your view?
I would argue that it is, but even further, yes. The short answer is yes. It is a distinction that matters because that part, that subsection, was created right of action for a third party who's injured off-site by a minor. That's what the spirit of that law was for. That's what that part was for, and that's why it's called right of action. And so the fact that this minor, number one, was 15, was on site, the injury occurred on site, never left, there wasn't an intervening accident, and the injury was caused by the defendants in this case, clearly that's not the situation this statute was meant to be. And obviously the goal is to try and give weight to the spirit of what the law was intended for. And I would submit that the legislature didn't intend that this statute be used as a shield in a situation like this.
So she's a victim. She's not a wrongdoer.
That would be our position. And you look at the cases that I cited from Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, and it talks about that. It talks about the ability for 15-year-old or younger to comprehend the true dangers. And I guess it goes almost, it's related to this concept of voluntary intoxication and willing to accept that risk and knowing it, knowing what the risk is, knowing that, given the maturity of someone's age, that matters. That matters. And I would agree, if you apply the Blair factors, clearly there should be a duty. When you look at the restatement of torts, restatement of law, there clearly should be a duty. And we look at cases like Eagle, there clearly should be a duty, separate and apart from what is dealt with in the cases relied upon by the appellees. So the yellow light's on, and I like to save some time, so it's okay with the court.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ortiz, your argument.
Chief Justice Reckonwald, honorable members of this court, counsel. Before I begin my presentation, I'd like to express my deep sympathy over the loss of the Sangs. I can only imagine the pain and suffering they had to go through. And for this, I have our sympathy.
And certainly the court would extend those same sentiments to the family.
The complaint in this case raised a single tort, a wrongful death claim. And the first problem of any tort case is duty, and without duty there can be no liability. And the lower court found that due to the existence of the statute, which most of the oral argument focused on, there was no social host liability. So the defining moment in this discussion is what is the effect and the meaning of 663-401. But to get there, I think it is important to understand what led up to the passage of that statute. Because if we look at traditionally in the common law, dram shop protected anybody who served alcohol. We realized that was not a very good policy, and this court in Ono versus Applegate in 1980 carved out an exception. Commercial supplier, person gets hurt, they're not protected by the dram shop. We then move on to the KFC case in 1990, February of 1990, Christmas party, people drinking, girl goes home, is involved in a horrific accident, and this court found that there was no social host liability. But what this court said is very important in the KFC case for our discussion here. It says at page 163, although we are well acquainted with the arguments for and against social host liability, the nature of the judicial role prevents us from capably deciding the merits of social host liability. It also says our legislature has not enacted a statute imposing liability upon social hosts upon which we as a court could determine civil liability against a person. So that was in February. That August, along comes the Winters Silver Fox case. And that case is a little different because in that case you have an 18-year-old who's at the Silver Fox bar and he has too much to drink and he leaves and fatally, he's involved in a fatal one-car accident, and he is the fatality. And again, the same issue was presented. And the court explained in quite detail that this person was not entitled to bring a claim against the bar. And what the court said, again, is very indicative at page 528. It says, drunken persons who harm themselves are solely responsible for their voluntary intoxication and cannot prevail under common law or a statutory basis. It goes on to say, neither minors nor adults who hurt themselves after becoming intoxicated possess a cause of action against those who provided liquor to them. And then at the end of the case at 535, the court goes on to say that it is within the legislature's province to weigh and balance the far-reaching social, economic, and legal consequences of modifying the common law. Now, why is that important? That is important because in 2003, the legislature did. It said, we are going to create, we're going to address this issue of social host liability. And up to that point, given Winters and given Bertelman and given all of these cases that we've been talking about here today, there was an insulation for an absolute protection, immunity, if you will, for the social host. Whether he gave alcohol to someone who went out and injured a third party, whether or not someone got injured on his property, it didn't matter. The social host was insulated. So it is on that basis that the legislature took the common law and carved out a very narrow exception. And that exception was that if you are the social host and you serve, or, and you're over 21 and you serve alcohol to someone who's under 21 and that person goes out and causes an injury, you cannot, you don't have the shield. That little narrow exception. Okay, so what this means is, and what does the final section mean? What does section C mean? The legislature was essentially codifying the common law up to that point with respect to social hosts. It's a codification of the Winters decision and the Ono versus Applegate and also the KFC case. So what happened with that particular language?
Is it your position that the legislature has precluded us from further common law development in this area?
Well, based on the language of the cases, such as Winters and some of that I've just cited, this court has taken the position that it is a legislative question.
Well, I understand. My question to you is, what does the legislature think, or what was the legislature's intent? Has the legislature, by its action, precluded us from further common law development in this area? Is that your position?
My position, that's correct, and that any decision having to do with social host liability has to first go through that statute.
And do you see that legislative intent reflected in the plain language of the statute, or its legislative history?
No, it's not. There's nothing that says, you know, we're doing this because.
We intend to preempt the field.
Right. The word preemption is not in the legislative history.
When the legislature wants to clearly create immunity, it has utilized different language, has it not?
I'm sorry, you had to use what kind of language?
The legislature has passed statutes that create immunity for certain classes of people or certain situations.
You mean actually use the phrase immunity?
Right, or okay. Shall not be liable.
Right.
Right. But in this case, C just says shall have no right of action under this part,
right?
Right. So does that not suggest that there could potentially be liability under another part or under common law?
No, because the way I read that, with all due respect, Justice McKenna, is that because we have the common law with the full insulation and there was a narrow exception, they're saying, okay.
But Winters versus Silver Fox is fairly clearly distinguishable on its facts, right? A commercial establishment.
No, I understand. But I think the codification was Winters and KFC together, and they addressed the social host. Now, I think the distinction by saying, well, if they go off property and they get hurt and they cause damage, that should not make a difference. I mean, would it make a difference if the minor consumed alcohol and then ran his car into the wall within the property, or if he stepped one step out and hit a fire hydrant, that it would, to me, that doesn't make
what if the decedent was 10 years old? Would that have made a difference in your eyes? What if the decedent was 10 years old?
It certainly makes a difference because
because
what this statute talks about is voluntary intoxication. A 15-year-old person is old enough to voluntarily consume alcohol.
I'm sorry, where's the word?
Is not.
Where's the word voluntary in the statute?
No, it's not in the statute. But it was in the cases which were codified. Voluntary consumption of alcohol.
All right.
And I think the statute has to be.
So is there a question of fact? So I understand that the autopsy showed a blood level of 0.433.
Quite significant.
Yes. And so I'm just wondering, is there a question of fact as to whether or not after a certain point, whether intoxication was actually voluntary?
Well, I would think then that would apply in every situation where someone becomes intoxicated. At some point, you lose. I mean, that's what it does. That's what alcohol does.
Right.
And I think that's why we have Dram Shop Act, because it accepts the fact that this is an evil. Alcohol is a poison. It causes people to do things that they otherwise would not do.
Mr. Ortiz,
yes.
If we follow your interpretation of 66341 2C to its logical conclusion, what is your argument against Mr. Otake's argument that if we apply it strictly, then you have situations, maybe it's not an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, who is drinking voluntarily, assume voluntary intoxication. Do you think the legislature meant for a child that young to not be able to recover?
No, but the language that they used was under age 21 years of age. If they wanted to say between 18 and 21 or 16 or some other arbitrary cutoff, that's for the legislature to decide. But our point is that if we believe that under the separation of powers, this court, based on its prior rulings, cannot step into this area. Now that the legislature has spoken, if we are to go into this whole idea of, well, there's a special relationship and so forth, if there are different exceptions to the exception, then it has to be done by legislative action. Not by this court.
Do you think a landowner owes a duty of care to people they invite onto their property?
Yes.
Okay. And does that not create a special relationship in this situation?
Well, I don't believe it creates a special relationship because, I mean, the law has certain, you know, master-servant and they recognize some very well-known relationships. Just to say a guest comes onto your property, that there is now a special relationship, there's a duty of care. But I don't believe there's a special relationship, because that would mean that every time a teenager goes to another teenager's house, that there somehow is a special relationship with the parents, and they now become the custodian of that person becomes the ward. And I don't believe that we can go there on this case. Because that is such far-reaching ramifications if we find, or if you find, that there is a special relationship here based on just someone coming over to the house. Now,
well, there's a narrower basis, which is Restatement of Torts 322, which talks about an actor who knows or has reason to know that by his conduct, whether tortious or innocent, he has caused such bodily harm to another as to make him helpless and in danger of further harm. That actor is under a duty to exercise reasonable care. At some point, taking the allegations of this complaint in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs, wouldn't it be a reasonable inference that the defendants, or at least some of them, were aware that Makamai was essentially helpless because of what had happened there that night, and then had a duty to do something at that point?
If the restatement is accepted, and if the court says that there is no immunity to the homeowner under 66341, then if a person is incapacitated on your property, and you are the cause of that incapacitation. Paragraph 35 of the complaint in this case talks about failure to render aid. It's the only place they mention it, but it says because of the alcohol. And in our view, if you're tying it into the furnishment or the furnishing of alcohol, that this statute comes into play and it protects the social host. Just on one other point.
But it's a different duty at that point. It's not just the furnishing of alcohol, which is the arguably, or at least under your reading, is what the statute is talking about. Now you're into a different terrain or a different duty of now dealing with a situation where the person is essentially helpless and unable to protect themselves. And does the statute mean to reach out and preclude us from finding a duty in that situation?
I will admit that that is a difficult situation. Now, for example, let's say this person didn't pass out but got into the car and hit a stone wall within your property, and you see her. She's now hurt from the accident, and alcohol was obviously a cause, and you see her there. I don't believe that it is certainly morally wrong to just say, well, it's not my problem. I'm going to go to sleep now.
What's
I certainly appreciate that?
That.
I'm sorry?
What's the difference between that and this situation where you have a girl?
I understand who's at that. That's why. That's why I said it's a difficult. That's why I'm saying it's a difficult part of our argument here, and I'll concede that. And because the restatement says what the restatement says, and logic says what logic says. If I could just shift gears just a little bit. All the argument so far and everything that's been talked about is the 25-year-old who served alcohol to the minor. There are three defendants, one of which was the owner, Eden Pacific. There's no way they can fit into any of these facts. And the only allegation against Denise Clark is that she was present. Whether she was present or not, none of the duties that the court is making reference to would, or argued by Mr. Otake, would come into play.
But summary judgment in this case was granted based on social host liability in this statute, correct?
Right, but...
So the court really didn't even have an opportunity to address the possibility of other defenses.
Well, that's true, and it wasn't briefed.
Right.
With that, if I could just check my notes real briefly. I do not believe I have any other points that I would wish to share with your final report. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ortiz. Mr. Otake, your rebuttal.
Thank you. Just first, a point of clarification. With regards to the Winters case and some of the language Mr. Ortiz talked about in Winters about how this should be left to the legislature, I want to make clear that what the Winters case, I would submit, says is that 18 and under was always part of this protected class because of the certain statutes. And what I believe the court was saying is that when the statutes changed the age to 21, I believe what the court was saying is 18 and under is part of that class, has always been part of that class. Whether or not 18 to 20 should now be part of that class, that's something that should be left to the legislature. That's, I think, an important distinction, because the court wasn't saying nothing of any of these things that should be dealt with by our court. That's what they're saying, because that case was based on the statutes that made 18 and under part of a protected class. And they were simply saying, because the legislative history, when they raised it from 18 to 21, was not based on their expression of intent to include that group in the protected class, was based on getting federal funds, the court said, if we're going to now include that in the class, it should be something the legislature should say. I want to address the word immunity that he uses, and I would submit that that is not what this statute does or the case law does. I mean, I think clearly this is not immunity. I think I would submit that it's talking about a certain situation, a certain set of facts, and it doesn't mean that a homeowner, whoever serves alcohol to a minor, is immune from any type of suits. I mean, if that's the case, you take that to its logical conclusion, then as soon as someone comes onto your house, you're better off serving them alcohol. I mean, that's absurd. That's absurd. So it's not immunity. I leave you...
What about the restatement 322 that I asked Mr. Ortiz about, the notion that whatever one's view might be of the other duties and the effect of the statute, that this case is somewhat different at the point at which she was so intoxicated as to be helpless, that at that point another duty, at least one could argue based on 322, exists.
And that's exactly what our argument is, and that's why I say to you, I'm not asking you to overturn any case. I'm not asking you to change any statute. I'm simply saying there are other duties present here, and as I summarize them, the duties related, coming to us from Gable versus Honolulu, dealing with a land occupier and someone reasonably on the property for as long as they're on the property, the duties in the restatement is talking about if you put someone in harm's way, if you injure them, you should help them. And that's not being unreasonable to suggest that should be a duty here in our state of Hawaii. And then the Blair factors as well. With that said, under these facts, what I'd like to leave you with is just that, is that it's, I don't find it to be an unreasonable position to say, if you're going to invite a 15-year-old girl onto your property, provide her with lethal amounts of alcohol, and do nothing as she lies on your floor helpless, that there should be a duty. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to both of our attorneys for your arguments today. The court will take this matter under advisement.